The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of the Coalition or of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
Yo, what is going on, people? Welcome to Throw Down Your Questions, episode 161. By the way, quick apology to the fans as well, because again, you know, we're still using this new format and, you know, I'm still figuring out things. I forgot to unmute you guys before that, so Manny only caught the tail end of what you said, so apologize to everybody for that. You know, they're like, Tony, why are you talking to yourself? You know, because now I can actually mute myself and mute you guys so nothing comes in, but I forgot to click both of them, you know, but we're learning. But yeah, once again, we do need to say, because they didn't hear it, we want to give a shout out to our boy Colby. Brett, what did you do? Just say it again for everybody who didn't get
here. Colby's in the hospital after fending off a vicious wild tree limb attack and saving all the women and children of the village.
Yes, yeah, Colby is the man, you know, former Game of Thrones podcast panelist, man, you know. Okay, and I think
it's cool for you, buddy.
Yeah, man. All right.
And,
yes.
And yes, we talked about the stream that I did right before the show.
Streaming for Vengeance.
Which is the Streaming for Vengeance 2. I completed the final secret boss in Nier Automata, which is Emil, and I got both the final ending for the game as well as the completing the mission. You have to kind of do it twice. But if you watch the video, I literally beat the boss like maybe five times, and I never get to this, you know, to, because when it decides to blow up the world or something at the end, because you beat it, I don't get there in time each time, so I have to go and replay it again. So you'll see me beat the boss a bunch of times.
That sounds like Majora's Mask, man. The world keeps ending. That's crazy. All right, man. So without further ado, let's get into some questions, man. Another kind of light week, you know, because I guess not much is going on, but we got some stuff. So yeah, if you guys are watching us after we recorded, make sure to drop us questions for next week's episode. And if you're watching us live now, hit us with some stuff, man. All right, so the first one is G Megaforce 123, who is the new final stage boss. And I want to thank this man for shortening the questions this week. That first one from last week took forever to read. Again, I appreciate the you going in there and stuff. We definitely were not confused about what you wanted to ask us, but All right. So the first one is gaming becoming like music where the good stuff is underground? A lot of popular music is crap, and to find the good stuff, you kind of have to look underground, not literally. Is gaming becoming the same way? I'm not saying that there aren't some good AAA games or anything, but are the business practices killing the soul and passion of AAA games just because of corporate? I agree with them on the first part. Yeah, definitely, like, music, you want to listen to good music, you got to go underground. You can't be listening to the pop shit. That shit sucked, you know? But the thing is, like, what would be underground equivalent of video games? Indie games, right? Most of those are not worth your time,
no,
you know?
That's not true. There's
Brad, you're the one that told me that Steam is basically like a wasteland of bullshit indie games. No, you told me that.
It is, but there are games in there. Like, for instance, I'm enjoying Life is Futile with all of its rocks and its bumps, and that's technically an indie game. Ark was an indie game. Izzy was an indie game. Don't Starve was an indie game. I know I'm listing off a bunch of survival games, but these are games that are just happen to be from my library. There are good indie games out there. The problem with that analogy is a lot of times indie music can be made by a very small group of people, yes. 3 to 5, right? Video games are inherently a larger production. So I think a better analogy are video games closer to TV and movies, where you have smaller independent studios that are still, you know, decently sized, making good things. You know, Netflix originals come to mind. I think a better analog for music being a small creative team would be comic books. And yes, you see that happen in comic books. And I know I'm jumping around all over the place, but the point I'm trying to make is that movies, music, comics, TV, video games, they all kind of follow the same rules. And the rules are actually dictated by the creative team and the amount of money invested. So, yes, you're seeing video games go the way of its entertainment peers. I think you're just mislabeling what its entertainment peers are.
Yeah, anybody else? I think Brett pretty much said it right there, you know?
I agree. I don't, you know, the one thing is, here's the thing. Kind of, I don't know if you have to go underground, but I do have to feel like you have to look away from the billboards. What I mean by that is, all these game companies have their big budgets. And you know, the biggest things that you see, if you watch network TV, they bombard you with Call of Duty of things. They bombard you with all kinds of other games. But then there's, you know, with all the big AAA games like the Star Wars and the Battlefields and all those other games. But then there's also those other games. They are AAA games, but they don't get those sorts of promotion. So I've always feel like the best thing you need to do is, yes, it's, you know, if you enjoy the Call of Duties and the, you know, Battlefields, Battlefront type of games, then by all means, go pick those up. But also don't forget to look in the other direction where a lot of other stuff is also going on as well. And that those things are not necessarily underground games. Gravity Rush is not an underground game. That game was made by Sony. So, you know, those games, these sorts of, there's all kinds of experiences out there. And don't forget that, you know, and don't be afraid to look around.
Yeah, Nier is another one of those games. You know, that's not exactly an indie game, and it's not exact. It's like, you know, no, what I'm saying. It's like in between. You know,
it's in between. And for Square Enix, it did a lot better than they actually thought it was
going to. Dude, I'd bring to
Nier was Square Enix.
Yeah, Square Enix. Yeah, they published it.
Square Enix published it, and Platinum Games built it.
That's right.
Harvest Moon overtook, or excuse me, Stardew Valley overtook the Harvest Moon titles in sales, if I recall correctly, and it was a fan-made game made by one person who was trying to imitate the style of the Harvest Moon games. So basically you have somebody who was emulating something and then became the standard in that genre. So, I mean, it happens. It happens. I think the thing I want to caution against is I think any multi-million-dollar venture runs the risk of getting homogenized. There are the exceptions to the rule. I would cite Deadpool, which is why it's one of my favorite movies. But even then, like, that ran on a shoestring budget for a movie. The more you invest, the more the corporate heads have to agree with everything that you're doing, which...
Oh, yeah, that happens with a lot of things. The more money that you throw at something, the more the corporate heads say, oh, no, you can't do it. You got to do what everybody else is doing, or you got to do exactly what you did before. That's why if you look at a lot of the games that kind of, some of the games that kind of revolutionized things, they're kind of games that didn't have a huge budget when they initially started.
Or a lot of oversight, maybe because of the huge budget.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. I guess we can, go ahead.
Well, no, I kind of disagree with the premise of the question. I don't think that the only place, well, I don't know if he's insinuating this, but I don't think the only place where you can get good music is underground. It really depends on the genre, and it's kind of, and I don't think that even applies to video games, because video games is just a crapshoot of what's good and what's bad. There's a lot of bad AAA games, but there's a lot of bad indie games. So I don't think it just depends. Like, for example, Naughty Dog, I mean, shouldn't they be a part of the homogenized regimen? Like, but they make some of the best games. So it's like, it doesn't really apply to developers that have a good track record. So I don't see like any correlation with the underground stuff. Like the underground, like the indie games are much more prone to be more creative and to take risks. But other than that,
I can connect those dots for you. Your developer is your artist. Your publisher is your publisher. So you can have an artist get picked up. You can have an artist you really like get picked up by a big publisher, who then proceeds to intervene until the album just fucking sucks. It's not the artist's fault necessarily. Sometimes it is. Sometimes an artist can make a good album in spite of a publisher pushing for shit things. But I think in the video game industry, you're seeing a lot of the same thing, where it's not the developers so much as the publishers that are the biggest shitheads.
Well, yeah, because they add more oversight. But I don't know. I do agree with that point, but I don't know if that leads to a substantial amount of video games that suffer. I don't know how to phrase it.
That's where I think the analogy falls apart, because they're different things. Like, I think this question would be way easier if we talked about it in terms of like TV shows, right? Because you have things being brought on Netflix, you have Hulu originals, you have web series originals, and then you have big cable shows. Just because something premieres on Fox and it has $12 million dumped into it doesn't mean it's good. In fact, most of the time, to find good TV, you have to steer away from your CBS, your ABC, your Fox, and that kind of thing to find shows that are really geared towards you. And in that sense, I think the analogy really holds up. But again, those are similar teams working on similar sized projects with similar avenues to market. You can either go with the big people or you can try and publish independently, but it's still kind of a costly endeavor no matter what you do. Indie gaming, while I agree it can be made by just a couple people, like, those are not generally the games that reach mass appeal. So yeah, you can see a short film made by one person that goes to Sundance and really fucking love it, but does that really influence the market of movies? Not really.
Right. And just going back to games, if we do a survey, we can't talk about everyone else, but at least in Throwdown, if we were to mention our top 10 games of every year, I guarantee you 90% of them are going to be by big studios. So it kind of disproves that narrative that only the undergrounds are the ones that are making good games or at least have a stronghold on all the good games coming out.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I agree with the first part of the question about the music. Totally agree with that. All the shit I listen to, all underground stuff, but with the game stuff, the shit I play is the big stuff. You know, so I kind of don't agree with that, you know. But hey, it was a good question. Let's move on here to his second question. This is a funny one. Is Nintendo Serial System making a comeback? Are you guys going to review the new Super Mario cereal from Kellogg's? For you guys who don't know, back in the day, Nintendo used to have this thing called the Nintendo Serial System, but basically would have two cereals in one box, each dedicated to a different game franchise. Chris and Manny, you guys know what I'm talking about.
Zelda and Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, yeah. So right now they're making a dedicated Super Mario cereal. It has like Mario and Cappy and stuff on it. It has, you know, mushrooms and hearts and all other shit. So to answer your question, we don't review games on this podcast, so we definitely don't review cereal. You know, I wouldn't eat that shit anyway. Fuck cereal. Cereal's disgusting, you know?
All it is just Lucky Charms.
Yeah.
It's Lucky Charms with different shapes.
Tony asked people if they wanted him to lick the cartridge for the Switch, and they didn't approve of that. They didn't know. Cereal.
Yeah, it still boggles the mind. I asked people, basically I asked myself, hey, do you want me to make a fool of myself on camera? And they said no. Okay.
you want, here's the thing, dude. You're not, the thing is that you're not that.
I would have done it for the people, though. I would have done it for the people. But the people said no, so I had to listen to them. I didn't like the Nintendo Switch cartridge. So, yeah, I'm not reviewing no fucking cereal. I hated cereals when I was a kid, you know, with the fucking milk soggy shit. Fuck that, you know. I'm not eating this shit either, you know. Like, if I ate cereal back in the day, like, I would eat it, like, normal. You know what I mean? Like I would open up and, like, you know, eat it by hand or whatever. But, you know me, man, you know me and sweets in general. Eh.
I don't think it's a person.
Yeah, Manny, like every time we, like when we go, you know, for my birthdays and shit, do you guys get, you know, do I get dessert? No, I'm like, well, I don't need that shit. Just give me another helping of that meat.
here's what'll happen. Like with you, it's like you take you out for your birthday, and then you get like a cake, and you get eat like half of the slice of cake, and you're like, yo, you want to finish this, Manny? And I'm like, yep.
Yep. Basically. I'll finish that. You know, say, hey, Tony, you want this last piece? No, I'm good. You know, I don't like sweets like that. I like salt, son. It's grease. And
I'm pretty sure that they would rather see you eat Hawaiian pizza than that shit.
Yeah, they would. And you guys, listen, I was already offered, what was it, $200 almost by AJ. I said, fuck that. I'm not going to say it on air, but I'd rather do something to a man's private parts, you know, then eat pineapple pizza, and I would never do that to a man's private part, so you ain't getting me eating no pineapple pizza.
Damn, that's some strong conviction against pineapple right there.
No, fuck that.
Fuck that.
I wouldn't go that far.
You know, fuck that, you know? Like, if you give me the choice that you want to die, you're... Actually, no, I'd rather live. I'll eat the pineapple pizza. Let me not go too crazy, you know? Or I could take the gun and shoot the guy who's offering me that pizza. I'm like, man, what are you doing, man? But I won't kill him. I'll just shoot him with the kneecap like Terminator.
There are some things worse than death, yeah. Like pineapple pizza.
Come on, man. Pizza's good. Don't put pineapples. Disgusting. All right. Next question here from... Okay, this is not a question exactly, but I wanted to address it regardless, right? This is from Antonio Suarez, 24Z. So he goes, again, not a question, just a statement. EA portfolio of games is shrinking, but the revenue is growing, and it's all because of FIFA microtransactions. They made $800 million on a single mode in FIFA last fiscal year. That is the reason EA is chasing monetization with every game they release. The big problem is in FIFA, they introduced microtransactions little by little over several installments, and people were fine with that. While in recent games, they went all in and beyond, and now even their cash cow, FIFA, can be in trouble. Relying too heavily on microtransactions for income slash profit is a dangerous strategy and can send EA stocks down the shitter if they are hit with regulations or banned on loot boxes. Yeah, Adam, man, give me your thoughts on that, since you know you're always talking about this shit.
Yeah, man, this has been going on for a while, but just now, because of the whole thing with Battlefront, that community is being heard. I mean, there's a hashtag fix FIFA, and there's a petition, and it's all about this. I mean, we've seen it, you know, as somebody like myself who's constantly playing Foot and using the companion app, and now seeing that everything's about microtransactions. They are just not giving, especially with the introduction of loan players, which is the worst. You know, here it is, you get the star player that you want, and you can only use it 7 times. You know, and it just makes no sense. It's like, and they have all these new systems. Oh, yeah, cash in these players. You cash in those players. And these are players that are legit full-time players on your squad. And now you cashed in 11 players to get one lone player. That just doesn't add up. Doesn't make sense. You know, so hopefully they'll learn from this and go back. But, I mean, we're seeing it add to every aspect of their gaming universe when it comes to any of their EA sport games and non-sport games. You know, they're basically fishing and trying to see if they can, you know, hit that 800 mark in another IP. You know, now it's backfiring, so hopefully the next go around, because, you know, every year they come out with these sport games, they'll make some changes, but it all depends on the numbers.
Adam, let me ask you a stupid question. When FIFA was introduced to these small loot crate changes and they were fine with it, did anybody actually stop and ask, how does this improve or accommodate my game experience in any way?
Like, it's a card game. That's it. All it is a card game. It's no different than Magic the Gathering and all of those. It's the same thing. You pick a field, you know, you get a bonus for the field that you're playing on. You pick the players, you pick the defense, you get bonuses that you put on top of those cards. You change it. It's just like that.
So they Trojan horsed it inside a somewhat fun system.
Yeah, because, I mean, the only difference is that you actually play the games. It's not just cards. You have the cards, and once you have the cards and then you go against somebody, you're playing FIFA. You know,
it's like Pokemon.
Yeah, it's like Pokemon. You now have them all out on the field with whatever perks you put on them. If I gave one guy a hunter card, now he gets a boost to running and dribbling, you know, and, you know, shooting and those type of things. There's an engine card. I mean, there's so many different add-ons to these players. So you're modifying them, and slowly they've added these as updates, and that's fine. You know, all that was fine. And basically, I mean, for a long time, people were farming. I mean, there's websites where you can go. I think I talked about it before. $5-7, get 100K points. And then that's it. You didn't have to go buy packs because people didn't like the whole randomness of it. You know, you pay, what was it, like 5,000 or 8,000 in-game coin to get a regular pack that has like 7 cards in it, you know, and you hope that you get something good. You may not.
So can you blame EA? And I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Can you blame EA for tapping into a revenue stream on their own game that was already there that they weren't profiting from?
Nope. You can't blame it. What you could blame is the fact that they took features out and replaced them with these loan players. I mean, the ability to build these squads and to trade them in were to get good players, and you know, they were just non-tradable players, which is fine. Okay, I can't put on an auction house. I'm stuck with it, but that works for me. Last year, I had a lot of great players that way. Now they're just giving me loan players, so I'm giving up all this and getting less because these guys will expire. When you get these loan players, that's the other thing. You can't buy them. So it's not like, oh, okay, I have this own player, now let me just cash in. No, you can't. You have to go into the auction house, and most of the players you're giving as loans cost over $1 million, like in-game. You know, so that's like over $100. And it's just it's pointless. And the fact that they're doing that just ruins the fun of the game, because before it's like, oh, wow, this is great. I might get some good players. Now I know I'm just going to get lone players. It's not even worth it. And that's the issue a lot of people are having, because they're all seeing it now. The game's been out for a few months. I'm like, hey, wait a minute. I'm getting scammed. Everything is pointing, forcing me to go get packs. It's not right. And that's it. So I'm not surprised that they incorporated their foot into everything else. I mean, after FIFA took off, we saw Madden get Mutt, and that was a thing for a little bit. And then they tried in the NHL. I don't think it's working out that great, because I know some people in the NHL, and they're like, I don't bother with that. You know, and then we see it with the UFC. You know, in the UFC, they introduced that in UFC 2, where there was the Ultimate Team, or it was pretty much, yeah, it's just listed as Ultimate Team. It makes sense for Ultimate Fighter. And it's like, you know, you add a boost to this, learn this flying arm bar and this, and it's like, okay, but the mechanics suck, so it's just not that engaging. But I could see why they're doing it. But when they start adding it to other non-sport games, it just doesn't feel right. I mean, it doesn't feel right now with the way they're pushing it, but definitely didn't feel right in Battlefront and, you know, some of the other games that they're trying to push it on, like the Need for Speed. You know, it's like, if I want to upgrade my car, let me upgrade my car. Don't make it a mini slot machine game where hopefully I get the part I need. It's horrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's some bullshit right now. All right. Next question here from Black Metal Gamer. Have you guys ever experienced post-gaming void? What I mean by this is that you were so immersed and satisfied with the game that when you beat it, you feel kind of empty and don't want to go to a new game, at least not immediately, because the game you beat was so good. What games in your life have done that? I mean, okay, here's the thing. I've definitely experienced that, where like you beat a game and you still want to keep on playing it. But the thing is, like, you know, for example, you have other shit to play, or you've already gotten 100% on. It's like, there's nothing more to do. I can't name a game, but I've had that happen to me a bunch of times. First, like, fuck, I want to keep playing, but I have no reason to keep playing anymore. So
I'm doing it right now, and you're back out of me. Yeah. The Division.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. I wanted to play Persona, but, you know, I had to move on. Adam, you said Division?
Yeah, because, you know, we beat that, and it's great. The story's done, but there's all this other stuff to do in there. And it's like, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, maybe I want to go back, maybe don't. And it's just, I love that world, you know? And it's like, you know what? I want to go back. I want to go back into it. And that's what I've been putting more time into. But yeah, it's a lot of other stuff to play, you know? And it's, the story's done. I mean, but there's a lot of side missions, a lot of other little things that they're always adding. And so I want to get back into it.
Yo, man. So I just barely finished playing Persona last week, and I was honestly pissed at the end, because the days were like, on it, like with Persona, if you don't know, like you play like each and every day, right? And sometimes each day has like story implications, and you get to do it like anything else you want to do on the game every day. And there, you get to a point at the end where the days just fly by, and I'm like, yo, I want to experience these days.
Yeah, man, I feel you.
And then at the end, when the game ends, I'm like, yo, can we do year two? Like, yeah. What the hell's going on? Why are you stopping me from playing this, man?
Yeah. I guess also I should throw this out. I can't believe I almost forgot about this. Samus Returns. I beat it last night. I got 100% in it. I'm like, I want to play it again, but there's no reason to, you know? Kind of stinks. Manny, what about you? Ever experienced that before?
Post-game, what was it again?
Okay, have you ever played a game where you finish it, it's like, oh man, I want to keep playing this game, but there's no reason to keep playing this?
Oh yeah, plenty of games like that, where the gameplay is so fun to play. Yeah, I've had that plenty of times. I mean, it's kind of happened with Nier, because it's like, it's a fun, the gameplay in that game is so fun. Metal Gear Solid 5, too, you know, it's just that engine is just such a fun place to play, but there's already nothing else for me to do, so... just move on, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's happening with Metal Gear too. It's like, I want to keep playing, but that's it. I've cleaned it all out.
You've unlocked everything in the game. I mean, unless you want to play those stupid what are those missions? The stupid mother base missions. Those things. Yeah. No more.
Yeah. Right. Chris, what about you, man?
I guess Dark Souls would have counted. Like I was going into like New Game Plus 7 and 8, and I was like, what am I doing? You know, you just keep beating it over and over again. It just keeps getting harder. I'm like, I've run out of things to do. And you get sad. So I definitely know what he's talking about. You're like, man, this was so good. I don't want it to be over. But it's over, and you got to move on.
You know. Yeah. All right, Brian, man, what about you?
I guess Warframe. I'd go with...
Yeah, Warframe, he's still playing it.
No, I'd say Dragon's Dogma. Like, that game felt like it ended way too fast. Like, first time round, it's like, wow. Because I just remember that I got, like, this one place was like, oh, I'm going to, like, quote-unquote, fight the dragon for, like, the last time. Because you know how games do it. It's like, yeah, you're going to fight the final boss, and then you fight him. And then it turns out he's actually, like, a lot more powerful. You have to go back and, like, power up again and fight him, like, the final time. But then this time was like, okay, cool, let's just do the pretend final fight. And then it's like, oh, that was the actual fight. I'm like, oh, shit. Now what do I do? Like, I wanted more game. Like, oh, it kind of sucks.
That withdrawal. Yeah, man.
Yeah, it's really bad.
All right, Adam, what about you, man? Oh, yeah, anything besides The Division? Like, anything old school?
Anything old school that I finish and just keep going? Oh, Mega Man, you know? I finished that and just keep going back to that. That type of thing, you know?
All right, and Brett, what about you, man?
Obviously Dark Souls, every time, but I never really finished either. I mean, now that Dark Souls 3 is done, I did, but, like, I played in Dark Souls 1 until Dark Souls 2 came out, and then Dark Souls 2 until Dark Souls 3 came out, because I was like, no, don't let it die! One of the ones that always stuck out with me, though, was the first God of War. I'm not sure if it was the narrative, or the pacing, or it was actually kind of a short game, but, like, yeah, I immediately got to that point, I was like, oh, shit, I'm fighting Zeus already? Like, there's gonna be more, right? There's, like, another chapter? And then it was over.
Yeah, I'm going to throw in God of War as well. The first one, you know, it's like the final boss was actually Ares. And it's like, Manny, I think I remember telling, like, this game was short, you know, it felt short because it was just so good, you know.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, then you're going back to play it on hard mode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know the final boss was Ares, but I meant specifically the build up to Zeus.
Oh, in 2. Yeah. Because that's, you know, that's where you fought him. You fought him in 2. God of War 2. I didn't feel that way about that. I beat him. I'm like, I'm good. You know? All right. So next question is this is an interesting one. Of the game genres you do not like, are there any games that you do like that are part of your dislike genre that are the exception to the rule? So basically, is there a game in a genre you don't like that you do like? Kind of a tricky question, but it's interesting. Well,
Persona 5.
Oh, you guys, you don't like
JRPGs? Yeah. I don't like them. But that one stood out to me. I really liked it. I liked the story. I liked the artwork. You know, it was fun. It was different.
Nice. What about you, Brett?
You know, I'm not a fan of fighters in the last. And it's a tough question because I have a long and storied gaming past. I used to, like, love fighters. And that after Soul Calibur, not so much. I really enjoyed Absolver, but a lot of people would argue that's just a very Souls-esque fighter. So I'm trying to think of a good example. I don't really have any game genres that I don't, like, hands down, don't like. I'm generally not a fan of racers, but I loved Burnout. I'm generally not a fan of sports games, especially football games, but I love Mutant League Football.
I don't think that counts, you know.
That's what I'm saying. Like, none of these count because they're all kind of genre bending games.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for me, I'm having the kind of opposite thing because I can't think of a game that in a genre. Because, like, okay, let's break down the genres I don't like. I don't like RTS. Don't really, you know, like any RTS games. I don't like like strategy games. I can't name any strategy games I like. Survival games, I don't like those. I can't name any survival games I like. So
Jesus Christ, you just named off like 3 of my favorite genres.
Yeah, I mean, see, if you asked me this back in the day, I could be like, yeah, I don't like first-person shooters, but I like Doom, but I like first-person shooters now. So that's
Isn't Zelda a survival game now?
Yeah, and that's kind of why I didn't like the Breath of the Wild and the whole weapon fragility bullshit. But
shut your whore mouth.
You know? I can't answer this question because if it's a genre I don't like it for a reason, and I'm not going to like any games for it, you know? So, yeah, I don't have anything. Sorry, you know? Manny, what about you?
What was the question again?
Damn it, man. You got to pay attention. I mean, you're the co-host, man.
Well, I'm currently trying to, you know, finalize the
all right.
The
so game. Basically, is there a genre of games that you don't like that actually has a game in it that you do like?
That's a hard that I actually do like.
Yeah, like, okay, name a genre you don't like generally.
Oh yeah, BioShock. I'm not a big fan of first person shooters. BioShock and BioShock Infinite.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, what about you, man?
I'm in the same boat as you. Like, yeah. I'm thinking, like, there's genres I don't like the dance game genre.
Yeah, they fuck that.
There are no exceptions to that. They all suck. So, yep. I can't think of any. And it's like, yeah, if, like, I don't hate sports games. I don't generally play them. But, like, if you pick something like Brett Pick Mutant League, it don't count. That's, like, more like a combat game, right? It just has a football skin on it.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
So, yeah. So I'm in the same boat. Now, if I don't like a genre, it's really for a reason. I'd stay away from it.
Yeah, by the way, my sports game would be NBA Jam, but that shit wouldn't count either.
NBA Jam.
You know? He's on fire. All right, Carlos, man, what about you?
I'm one of those people that don't really hate any genres in particular. Chris mentioned dance games. I don't know, I kind of like Just Dance, just because it gets people, like, when I used to play it, like, I used to play with a lot of people, and there were generally fun experiences. So I would say Just Dance 3 for the Wii. that's what I would say.
Yeah. By the way, I need to jump in because Kal-El says that he doesn't like RTS games, but he liked Command & Conquer on Saturn. So did I, but I wouldn't replay that game ever again. So I'm not going to count that. Even though I did like that game because basically I used cheats and stuff. I would always just keep throwing nukes at the other guys and stuff. And I liked Kane, you know, the Nod guy. He was cool. But yeah. I liked more the world of it than the actual gameplay because the gameplay is boring. It's like you're just building little bases. That's stupid, you know?
Fuck you!
You know, but Kane, hey, man,
you're
is talking cool.
Shit on Command and Conquer now. You just need to stop.
I said I liked playing Command and Conquer back in the day. I said I liked it. All right. Who are we up to? Brian, man. What about you?
Nope, don't have one.
Yes.
Games I don't like playing, and I generally don't play. Like, nah, I'm good.
All right. Okay. That's everyone. So, we're moving on here to Joel Torres. So his first question is, what are your thoughts on, Chris, this one's for you, man. Basically, what are your thoughts on people who are cheering and happy that Nintendo has a lot of money saved in their war chest? Take it away, man, because then you dispelled this myth a while ago.
Yeah, when I read the last financial report, I compared it to previous ones. Here's the thing, guys, like, you got to understand this. It's just because something sells well, it doesn't mean a business even if a business is super profitable, they have other expenses and things they have to concern themselves with, especially with Nintendo, when they defer taxes. And I showed that in the last financial report, is that they had to pay those deferred taxes from the losses that they took from the Wii U. They kept deferring their taxes. Their comprehensive income kept going negative. So when it comes now to when they're profitable and they're in the black, well, guess what? You got to pay the government again. So they end up saving some money. Yes, they have some liquidity, but they mostly lose that profit going into taxes. So, like, you have to people are saying that generally are uninformed. They don't understand, like, business doesn't work like, you know, your mom giving you lunch money. It's like, now you're 10 bucks richer or something. Like, it doesn't work like that. Like, there's a lot of expenses. Companies, especially global companies, with huge expenditures that you don't I can't even name all of them. Especially a company like Nintendo that ships stuff around the world. And they have to account for foreign exchange currency losses and all that stuff. So I show all that stuff. And when I do the next financial report at the end of December, I'll show you again. But in terms of now, when I read the last financial report, they are not saving a lot of money. They had to pay a tremendous amount of taxes, even though they were immensely profitable. So you got to keep that in mind.
Yeah, but, you know, as far as the cheering stuff, what do you make of that?
Well, it's just, you know, if you're happy Nintendo's doing well, fine. But don't make up bullshit when you don't understand how business works, especially business finances. Like, don't say, like, oh, they've got some war chest. That was bullshit. I showed that was bullshit even before the Switch. Like, when they kept saying Nintendo could survive, like, 20 years or 30 years of losses at this rate, which is ridiculous. Like, and I proved that wasn't true. That was a rumor created by Nintendo Gamer UK, a magazine that doesn't exist anymore for good reason. And it spread like telephone around the world, and people kept repeating it, but it was false. It was false when they said it, and it's false now.
Yeah, fake news, man. Fake news. All right, man. We don't need to go. We've gone over this shit before, so let's move on to the second question. Do you guys think it? This is a very interesting question too. Do you guys think it's unfair that Studio Japan seems to be protected from being shut down, unlike Sony's Western studios? Okay, I think I know where he's coming from. Because you know, Sony has closed down certain studios because they haven't been profitable, or whatever. I don't think Sony expects Studio Japan to make a lot of money. They generally make small indie type of games, right? So they're not expecting them to be like a cash cow. That's what's going on there. So it's not really that they're protected. It's just they're not expecting them to deliver these insane AAA games. They've never done that, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that's what's going on there, you know? Because I think he's trying to say, he's like, hey, Studio Japan is a Japanese studio. Sony's a Japanese company, so they're trying to protect their own. I don't think that's what's going on. You know?
I mean, I also feel like it's Studio Japan is a little bit of a different situation where it's actually a Sony game development studio that's inside of Sony.
Yeah, exactly. It's,
all their other studios, the big difference with the other studios that they have is that they're all exterior companies. You know, the guys that make God of War, you know, Santa Monica, you have the Little Pig Planet guys, Media Molecule, all these other companies are all exterior companies with the exception of the interior ones. I think even Sony Europe even still has a branch there, which they develop like game engines in. So those guys haven't closed. So I feel like it's the way the situation is that if it's an internal company, they just restructure whatever that company, you know, what their internal development studio, they just kind of restructure it. Kind of like how Team Ico kind of was part of this interior part of Sony, but then eventually it wasn't.
Yeah. So could you say those other studios are like second party studios?
Yeah. Most of them are probably like somewhat second party because Sony does own them.
Yeah, but they're not 1.5 parties. I don't know. But the point is, like, yeah, I don't think they're going to, like, nix their actual real studio. That's a Sony studio within Sony, Sony Interactive Entertainment. They're not going to get rid of them,
like,
you know?
It's just like how if Microsoft Studio had a definite interior studio, I'm sure those guys would also be, they just restructure it. They wouldn't just close them down.
Yeah, exactly. All right, I don't think there's anything more to say about that. So we'll move on to All Day Digital. So, okay, this one, by the way, forgive me, All Day, because he was like, hey, let me know if any of these questions have been asked before. I had him change one of them. This one I didn't want to change because things are a little, even though we've talked about this and answered this before, mm-hmm. I do want to talk about it because things have obviously been updated. So he goes, I have been enjoying my PlayStation, also because this question's going to get us some traffic. I'm just being honest. Okay, I have been enjoying my PlayStation 4 more than any other console of this generation. I believe that Sony's creative process is superb due to keeping the same formula that's been working for years. Games. So what went wrong with Microsoft and the Xbox? Okay, now for context, All Day Digital was a guy that was primarily Xbox last generation. We've heard this story before.
I'm curious when he jumped to this generation.
Like what year, right?
When he jumped to PlayStation.
Yeah, because everybody has different like stories.
Well, he's in the chat, so he should be able to
answer. Hey, answer that. I mean, what year did you jump on Sony? Because again, your avatar's a Xbox guy, you know.
I'm curious if it was a launch, because fucking Sony was. They did not have the games at launch. They did not have the games for like a year and a half after launch. So I'm just curious as to whether or not you jumped in after that drought or not.
Yeah, that's a good question. But yeah, like we've covered before, basically, here's what I think, right? Microsoft did release games. They released more games than Sony did in the beginning, at least, right? The problem is a lot of these games, right? Let's single them up. Sunset Overdrive, fucking Ori and the Blind Forest, and a couple others, right? They were new IPs that didn't sell. Microsoft tried to put them out there. The actual audience itself. So it's not really Microsoft's fault so much as the Xbox gamers' fault for not buying these games. That's what happened here. That's the problem. So what
we're Can I also say that Microsoft handles its intellectual property a lot the same way Fox does. Dump a bunch of money into it, float it. If it doesn't get out of the bay and receive cheering applause, then you fucking sink that shit.
Yeah, like
they they do not really invest in brands very well. And much like, you know, the same problem goes for Fox and their TV shows. Like, there are a lot of shows or a lot of games that really don't, you know, kick up and get a full chance. They get their base prototype game out there, but they don't hit their running speed until their second or third iteration. And some places aren't very good at recognizing the potential in something, and then they just fucking axe it.
Yeah, or, you know, just kill the studio. I mean, like I always said, imagine if Guerrilla Games was a Microsoft studio. They would have been killed off, and they would never have gotten to release Horizon Zero Dawn, the game they actually wanted to make, you know, because Microsoft was like, oh, you didn't make much money. You're done, you know? I mean, and we're not going to get into the whole, you know, oh, Microsoft released a $500 console, all that shit. Not really necessary. But yeah, it was really, when it comes to games, the games were there. It's just the fans didn't buy them, you know? And now the thing is, the fans believe that the reason Sony won is because of power, right? So now Microsoft believed that shit. And that's why we have the Xbox One X. And that's what we've been seeing from, you know, reports. It's not that much better. I mean, look what happened. Oh, by the way, quick update. If you guys didn't see the latest Sony Stakes, quick update. Because on the last throwdown, we talked about... Brett, you're right over there, man. Hey, shit. We talked about how, you know, PUBG was going to run at 60 frames a second on Xbox One X and 30 frames on Xbox One S. Literally the next day, they were like, no, sorry, guys, it's going to run 30 on everything. So it's like you're spending $500 on this console. And we told you from the beginning, expect those multiplayer experiences to be exactly the same. Parody, there you go. So, yep. Yeah, Microsoft didn't learn their lesson. You shouldn't have listened to these crazy fans who thought they only lost because of power. I put a lot of that blame on why the games didn't sell squarely on the fans, you know? Chris, get in here, man. What do you say about all this?
Well, it's there's some complicated things. So if you go back looking at... Microsoft as a company, especially the Xbox division, when Xbox One was coming up, who was running that? Right? Wasn't Phil Spencer? It was another guy.
It was our boy. Constantly make fun of. Don Matrick.
Don Matrick running it, right? And what is this guy is a classic suit. He ended up at Zynga. That should tell you all you need to know about this guy, right? And what does he want? He wants short investment, large returns. That's how these guys think. So he went all in. What did they come out with the first year? TV, right? I mean, they weren't focused on games. This motherfucker was focused on TV and, like, pushing sports and they were going to make a Halo TV show, all this bullshit for a game console. So this is the mess, I would say, that Phil Spencer had to pick up and fix, right? And he's been trying. I'll give him credit. He's been trying to fix it for years. Like, and the X was like the big push to fix what was previously wrong, but they pushed in the wrong direction. They put too much focus, as Tony said, on power and not on games. But so what did Phil Spencer do? He started shutting down titles, right, that he didn't think were working. He shut down Fable. He shuttered Lionhead. He shut down the Dragon game that Platinum was working on. He shut that down.
Oh, Scalebound, yeah.
Scalebound, yeah. Shut down Scalebound. Crackdown, they took back the formula. It's in limbo now. And so they didn't put their resources in the right place from the beginning. And remember, all of these things are long games. When you go, I've talked about hardware development, whatever, and software development too, you can't just decide, like, on Tuesday, guys, Crackdown, let's go, and then by Saturday you have it, or, you know, it goes gold. Like, these are long-term decisions. Also, when you pause a project or shelve it or put it on hold or give it to another studio, there's a whole bunch of lead up time, a whole bunch of whatever that has to happen. So instead they focused on the hardware. They got the hardware out, right? But they didn't focus on games. Games are the most important thing. We've said this over and over and over and over. So this is the mess that Microsoft now has to clean up. So when they get their titles lined up and release them, then we'll see them start to pick back up. But they focused on the wrong thing at the wrong time, and that's why they're suffering.
So let me ask you guys. Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Carlos. And then Brett could ask. Go ahead.
So for me, and I've mentioned this before, it was inevitable that Sony was going to sell more systems this generation. And this isn't trying to make this like a fanboy war kind of thing. It's like, so on the era of 360 had a lot of advantages towards it when it came out. number one was it was the first system that came out the generation. It was the easier console to develop for. It had the best online multiplayer system. It had a hard one. Well, yeah. It had like all these games released first on Microsoft on 360, including a lot of exclusives. Like people forget, Mass Effect was an exclusive for the longest time. BioShock was a timed exclusive. Like all these games, like Fallout, there weren't Dead exclusives. Rising. Yeah, Dead Rising was an exclusive. What's it called? Like Fallout and all those games, like all those Bethesda games weren't exclusive, but they ran better on 360. And it had a price advantage. And people bought extra consoles. Like me, I bought more than one console because it ring on me, but I was locked to the ecosystem, so I had to buy more. And within all of that, the PS3 still outsold it lifetime. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think if Microsoft didn't Red Ring, the end of last generation would have ended up differently. I think Microsoft lost a lot of good faith with that, how they, not just the Red Ring fiasco, but how they handled it in the early months. And that left a bitter taste in people's mouth that kind of erased the benefit of the doubt for Microsoft as a company, which bled into when they launched this generation and Microsoft went TV, 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 TV. A lot of people, kind of like myself, kind of went, you know, you've already kind of, you know, I'm already wary of you. I'm not going to assume that this bad sounding message means a good thing. And I think that helped decide what it was. But the short answer is, or question, do you think if Microsoft never had the production issues that they did, do you think they still would have lost last generation?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because.
Yeah, I think so. I need to jump in on this. I obviously the Red Ring of Death was a huge thing, but it was a huge thing for the beginning. Remember, last generation was huge. It was long, right? By the time they released the re-released Xbox, that Red Ring shit didn't exist anymore. So why didn't Microsoft, you know, maintain that lead? I think it was more people wanted to buy Sony system from the beginning. It was just too fucking expensive. Sony had the better games, obviously, but
remember Final Fantasy was an exclusive too. Like there's a lot of things that helped the Xbox 360 at the time.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing that helped the 360 was the fact that it came out a year before the PlayStation, you know, and then obviously when the PlayStation came out, the shit was so fucking expensive. Nobody was going to buy this shit. You know,
therein lies my point. Okay. So it came out a year before, meaning most core gamers, even if they were Sony fans, had an Xbox.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. If those things didn't burn out, those people wouldn't have they would have had incentive to go to Sony. But like if my Xbox never burnt out, I might not have ever jumped over to Sony.
Yeah, but here's the thing though, and this is why Microsoft initially did so well. How many Xboxes did you end up buying?
I bought three. See? And instead of buying a fourth one, I bought PlayStation. But that firmly entrenched me into PlayStation's camp later on in the cycle. For every PlayStation fan, it's a potentially lost Xbox fan. So it's not this side gains one or this side loses one. It's this side loses one and the other side gains one. There was a mass migration.
Yeah, but the Xbox, you didn't lose faith on Xbox on your third purchase. Like, think about it. You bought an Xbox three times. That means it failed on you at least twice.
Yeah.
So, and you still bought a third one. So when we went to a new generation, you had to assume that the system wasn't working. Yeah, like it had a track record, but I mean, you had to have, like, there was something that enticed you to get a PlayStation over an Xbox at the start of the generation. And I'm not too sure that most people said, oh, well, the Xbox Red Ring, so I'm just going to get a PlayStation.
Yeah, I don't think that happened either.
No.
I might be the exception then, because I was the guy who's like, I don't trust their hardware.
Yeah, no, that was not it. Nobody really talked about that, you know. But, Brett, to be fair, I got to throw you under the bus a little bit. You are the only person that thinks that most people bought Bloodborne because of the cape animation. So that's the shit you're focusing on.
When did I say that?
You said that a while ago, man. We made fun of you over that shit. It's like, remember when Bloodborne was shown, everybody was amazed by the cape animation? Like, nobody noticed that but you, bro.
He has a cape?
Yeah, see? But yeah, so
I will say the clothing mechanics in that game.
Yeah, but yeah, trust me, the Red Ring of Death was not the issue because that was prevalent during the first 2 years. Correct me if I'm wrong. We were in the first 2 years of the system, right?
You're right.
That was not the issue. And how long was Josh Generation? Like 8 years or something?
7-8 years, yeah.
Shit, nobody was thinking about that anymore.
You know? Yeah, so, okay, so... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I got a follow-up question. Say your thing first.
I was going to move on to like this generation and why the games don't sell well.
Yeah, go ahead. I want to hear that.
So now we went into the new generation, right? And we had the Xbox with all the bad press. I still don't think that bad press made Microsoft lose to Sony in sales. Like I said, it was going to be inevitable. And it was at a higher price point than the PlayStation. So the, like, what was it, like 2-to-1 sales almost from the get-go?
Yeah, from the get-go, so, pretty much.
So essentially, PlayStation got most of the fans that, like, most of the general fans. Microsoft, for some reason, got a lot of the, like, the bro gamers, like the shooters, the sports game people, like, that's most of the core audience that Microsoft got. So when they release games like Sunset Overdrive or Quantum Break or ReCore and Ori and the Blind Forest, it's like, yeah, no shit, this wasn't gonna sell. Like, you can release Persona 5 right now and it's not gonna sell.
That's a fact.
Gonna release Nier.
Yeah. Xbox ain't like, buying that shit, you know?
Yeah, so it's like you kind of pigeonholed your way into a niche audience, and it kind of stems from what we talked about earlier. Microsoft didn't invest in studios and developers. Like, I think they kind of had buyer's remorse with fucking Rare. They're like, yeah, we made this huge investment. We paid a gajillion dollars to get Rare, the biggest studio at the time, and they just ended up making avatars. Mm-hmm. For the freaking dashboard.
That's right.
And not only that, so it's like BioWare like was available for the taking, like Bungie, yep, was available for the taking. There's a lot of studios.
They wound up getting Bungie, and then they wound up selling it back to them.
Bungie essentially bought themselves back from Microsoft. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they could have been the console that had Mass Effect and Dragon's Age.
I appreciate that.
And they could have had a lot of other stuff, but they obviously didn't. And Sony is a house of God of War. It's a house of Uncharted, The Last of Us. You know, mm-hmm. Persona, like, even though it's a third-party game, it's the house of Persona.
It's also been considered the house of Final Fantasy either, too. Even when the game has been released on multiple on the Xbox as well.
Right.
It ended up doing better on the PlayStation.
Yeah. So it's like, for some reason, Sony has the label of being the console that has multiple games for multiple types of gamers, and Microsoft doesn't.
And it's gonna be a hole to dig out on Microsoft for that part, because inevitably any exclusive that they have, they're pandering towards a smaller percentage of the market share. Which leads me to the question I wanted to ask earlier, and Tony, feel free to bump this into an actual question for Sunday, but since Microsoft has wholesale lost both this and last generation, I'm just gonna say it now. People may be pissed. Look, they're gonna lose. Sony's gonna win. There's no way around it. This isn't a which console do you like better. This is a sales numbers game. All right. And even Microsoft admits that they're happy with their sales. That doesn't mean that they are the number one seller. That does not mean that they own a bigger percent of the market share. Facts are facts, people. Sony owns a bigger share of the market. That is the end of the story. They ended up last generation with a bigger share of the market. That is a fact. How is this going to affect Microsoft as a company? Are they going to be forever branded as console number two, as you see in kind of the cell phone markets? Because I'm so used to... us old gamers, we're used to seeing the crown kind of pass around every generation. One person rarely stays on the top of the mountain for this long, and Sony's been king of the mountain how many years now?
If you really think about it, for like 2020, you know, even PlayStation 1 destroyed the competition, man.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
You got to go back. It's for 22 years, Brett. 22 years.
And even the Wii generation, they were down by like 30 million, and we already know that Wii was an anomaly.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah.
And so, I mean, is Sony just going to be forever? Does this cement their place as the number one console with the largest market share? Does Microsoft have a chance next generation?
That's a good. I mean, Sony has to fuck up. Sony has to fuck up. That's the only way. But I think, Carlos, I think you even said this. PlayStation is synonymous with gaming now. Like Nintendo used to be back in the day, right? That's the shit people gravitate towards. So unless Sony fucks up royally, yeah, I think that's it. Or Nintendo actually gets their shit together and they topple Sony. But I don't think Sony's going anywhere, man. And Microsoft is not going to outdo them because, like you said, Microsoft caters to a very specific type of audience. That's very small. Sony caters to everybody. That's the key right there, you know?
I'm really curious to see how Cuphead did on Xbox
One.
Because, I mean, it's not a coincidence that Microsoft is now releasing all of their exclusive games on PC. It's not a coincidence that Cuphead's on Steam, that Ori and the Blind Forest is on Steam. Like, they want to sell they want to sell these games. They know they can't really make that much of a profit just selling them on your own console.
That's not even just for them. That's for developers too. When you're trying to attract people, I mean, that's developers or people to make games for you. That's one of those things where you could say like, look, do you have an audience of, you know, X million? And they're like, oh yeah, but we also have the Y million that are playing on PC, and X plus Y equals an acceptable number to try and publish because it gives you the sales figures you need. Whereas just X alone, and that's why you see a lot of games who, you know, exclusives going multi-plat, because just making a whole game just for the Xbox is going to be really hard to make the profit margins that you would otherwise.
Absolutely. But there's a reason why cash grabbing Capcom didn't release freaking what's it called, Street Fighter V on Xbox, and did on PC and PlayStation. They would have never done an Xbox PC exclusive release. There's only one console they would have gone exclusive when it comes to console exclusivity. That's PlayStation.
Well, there's only one console on the market now who it's reasonable to make an exclusive for, and that's PlayStation. And that presents a really big problem for Microsoft.
Well, now there's two with a Switch, but yeah, I see what you mean.
Well, yeah, I mean, if it's an indie game and it can go on the Switch, put it on the Switch, it'll sell. If it's an actual full-fledged AAA game, gasp, pearl clutch, I'm saying this, then you're going to have to play it on a real system, and that leaves you Sony or Microsoft. CD Projekt Red's next game, that's just not going to come out on Switch. So they're going to be looking at that, and they're like, okay, so it's either going to be multi-plat or exclusive. Well, there's no way in shit we're going to make it exclusive to Microsoft, because we'd like to actually sell some games and pay our people. We could go exclusive with Sony, but they're not really in need of exclusive games. They're not really having the public image where they're hurting, so they're probably not going to give us any kind of a good deal, because they've got us essentially bent over the barrel. Like, why should we make an exclusive game for them? They're not going to give us the best deal. We'll probably make our best profit margins being multiplat, and that's how every developer is going to think from here on out.
Same thing for Bloodborne. Bloodborne is like the prime example of that.
And it's funny because they didn't even put much stock in Bloodborne.
Yep. Still, it sold. And it was just on one console.
Yeah, and I wanted to actually bring this up earlier. While we're talking about this, I want to assure you people out there, it's not that we think Sony had some fucking magic crystal ball. Let's all keep in mind here that Sony bet big on The Order and then threw Bloodborne at the end of the sizzle reel for half a fucking second. So it's not like they had the whole situation firmly in hand from the get-go. No, it was like a firecracker shooting off, and they were just trying to hold the fuck on. And that's how a lot of launches are. But I just want to point out, it's not like Sony's, you know, this master plan that everything's going according to their grand scheme. Like, no.
Oh, hell no.
They got lucky.
Sometimes you throw shit out the wall and see what sticks.
That is just the way the industry works in general. You know, as a person who's worked in the entertainment industry, that there is no greater fucking plan. Most of the time, they say, hey, this looks like a good idea. All right, let's put some money into it and see if it works.
I'm just putting some counterweight to the guy out there who is hearing me and hearing me say basically like, oh, yeah, man, Sony had the whole thing from the get-go. They know what they were doing. Brett's on board with Sony. Like, no, they didn't know what they were doing. They were in an advantageous position that they exploited and to become more advantageous. Yeah.
I mean, the way that I'm sure that Bloodborne came across was that, okay, you know, the Dark Souls games, you know, the Demon Souls did well, Dark Souls did well. All right, let's pair up with these guys again for another first party production and see how that one goes. But, you know, of course, again, the other thing is that the Order 1886 was kind of pushed toward Western audiences in general. And usually when it comes to press conferences that are in the West, they usually tend to push games that are more Western centric. It's rare when you see a Japanese game show up there, with the exception of The Last Guardian and a couple of other ones.
And by the way, Dark Souls, Bloodborne, was only in PlayStation 4, outsold Dark Souls 3 in both consoles.
Holy combined. Shit! I didn't know
did
that.
Did it really?
Wow!
I didn't know that.
Wow!
Not by a lot, but it did.
Still, that's amazing. Think about one platform versus three, basically. Three platforms. That's crazy.
I mean, that kind of makes sense because I know a lot of people were on. It was a brilliant time to strike the iron because it was hot in the sense that a lot of people had heard of the Soul series. A lot of people were kind of jumping on board the Soul series, but it is a trilogy, and so when people were like, "Well, Dark Souls 3," like, they were hesitant about jumping into the franchise, and so it gave them a new opportunity with the same mechanics and a new IP and a new story to kind of jump in there. And I think a lot of people took advantage of that because I'm a firm believer of, generally speaking, you have diminishing audiences with sequels.
Yeah. All right, man. Let's move on here. Where the fuck are we right now? We got a bunch of new questions in here too, so appreciate that. Extending the show a little bit. His second question is, I think we were asked this before, but, you know, it's been a while, so we can answer it again. If you could pick your all-time favorite weapon in a video game, what would it be? Yo, man, what about them Blades of Chaos, man?
Oh, but then they got to be attached to, like, burned into your arms.
Yeah, I know what Adam's going to pick, man. The chainsaw
and then
gun.
Just become a button.
Right, Adam? The chainsaw gun from Gears of War?
Yeah. That was it. I loved it. Think about it. When that came in, it was like, whoa, mind blown. Look at this shit. Especially in the second one where you can flip it upside down and catch a guy from behind and badass.
Was that really like a super novel idea?
No, yeah, but it's awesome. It actually was at the time, it was like the greatest thing ever. You don't remember that? People went
that,
nuts.
That and the roadie.
No, I remember that. I remember people like, oh my god, they put a chainsaw on a gun. And I'd be like, well, I mean, that's cool, but I mean, it's not really like Revel. Is it like really fun? And people are like, yeah, it's really fun. I'm like, okay.
It was the presentation. It wasn't just like, yeah, and they're dead. It was like, it would zoom in. You would see the blood squirt on the screen.
Fucking meat and shit. You know?
You see shit. You'd be like, oh. And it was just like so. And even when you had the chainsaw battles in the sequel, when you would both collide and it would zoom in and you would just see like this Blades of Steel type of thing back and forth. Oh, that was awesome.
Okay.
What, man? What? There's so many cool weapons inside of games.
Yo, man, what about the Buster Sword, man? That huge ass sword.
I mean, the Buster Sword is cool, but to me, it's just like a big, like a shard of metal with a sword hilt attached to it. Yeah. It's cool.
Buster Sword is cool because of context.
Yes.
You know what? You know what I would say, and I'm not a big fan of that of Final Fantasy VIII. I would have to say the Gunblade.
Ah, that was crazy awesome too. Back in the day, people were like, yo, he has a gun in it. That's crazy.
He's got a gun and a blade. And I'm like, how does this shit work?
Yeah.
For just saying the chainsaw gun was not a novel concept, I did think the Gunblade was pretty cool. So I guess I'm a hypocrite.
By the way, Young Savage says his favorite weapon is the dildo sword from Saints Row 3. I think we're all flopping around.
Oh, God. Good choice. How are Bloodborne's trick weapons not the default answer to everything in this category?
Well, you know which one? If I want to say any of the Bloodborne crazy weapons, it's that fucking wheel one. The one that, like, it's like a lawnmower wheel. That one is pretty.
Oh, there's crazy. That dude. I love the disconnect sword, like the thing that like, disconnects into vertebrae and kind of turns into a sword whip. But my favorite of all time is the Steve Driver.
Yeah, Willie or Wiz. He says the Keyblade. Everybody loves the Keyblade. I don't give a fuck about it, but you know whatever.
I mean, the Keyblade is cool, but it's not sharp. It's just like a giant key.
Yeah,
you just bash someone in the head with. I mean, granted, it's cool. It's a cool in its simplicity. Actually, you know what? Speaking of keyblades, I actually do like the versions of the Keyblade. If you guys can see it, this is from a figure. This one's the one that Cloud gives you in Kingdom Hearts 2.
I love how you just have that shit ready, man.
I got this. I got Sora sitting on my desk. So I also have, you know, I have a cat, and you know, I got a bunch of other fun things on my desk. So yeah, the Keyblade that Cloud gives you is pretty awesome.
Yeah, Chris, get in here, man. Favorite weapons.
Does that have to be from games?
Yes. Or is it just, yeah, games.
It has to be from games. All right, Metal Gear Ray.
You know the Metal Gear Gun? Itself.
Yeah,
it Metal is a Gear. Weapon.
That's right.
Yeah. Again,
wait, Ray. Metal Gear Ray?
Yeah. Yeah, not Rex, because Ray, remember at the end of 2, you gave it a pounding and fucking Ocelot still gets away. I'm like, yo, give me that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I always goof on that on that one because it has a water gun laser.
Yeah, it has a laser gun, but that a laser water gun, whatever. That was silly, but I mean, Ray was awesome. But I mean, you'd think I'd pick Rex because after in 4, when Snake gets in it, that thing has been rusting for 20 years. He kicks Ray's ass. Kicks the shit out of it, you know. But I just give it up. That Solid Snake is awesome.
Yes,
Rex is beast.
Because he can make Metal Gear Rex do CQC, right?
Yeah, right.
If we're going big, can I just say Meteor?
Sure. Is that a weapon? Is that an attack? But sure.
You mean the thing that what is his face from Final Fantasy IV could do so easily, but for some reason Aeris had problems doing it
in yes, Final Fantasy
VII?
Yes.
Yeah, like, well, you gotta go but, to but the, for the spirit of the question, I think you can beat the weapons, not powers, you know, or attacks.
It was a materia.
It was a materia. Yeah. Something. But it's not a weapon, you know, exactly.
Why am I the fucking the Magitek mechs from Final Fantasy III?
There you go.
Yeah, from Final there you Fantasy go. 3/6. Yeah, those things are pretty awesome.
There you go. All right, Brian, get in here, man. Yeah, Brian, get in here, man. Weapons.
I don't know. I'm just going through, like, all the games, and I'm stuck at a loss here. I'm really not too sure.
What about the Sword of Olympus?
It's all right.
Side.
That was the most British thing you've said all week.
Yeah.
It's all right. It's not nothing interesting. It just hits really hard. Like, okay, that's cool and all, and it's blue. Okay. That's fair enough.
That was an item description. It hits everyone hard, and it's blue.
Yo, Chris, man, what about the whip in Castlevania, man?
Oh, Vampire Killer? Yeah. Well, that'd be awesome if I don't, like, freaking hit myself in the face, because you watch the anime, it's like, that's definitely a possibility that I could kill myself with that fucking thing.
Dude, remember when we met Igarashi at E3 and he had the fucking whip and shit?
Yeah, man, that guy's a character.
I mean, you know, I didn't like the game very much, but I did think the stupid what was it, the battle cross that Gabriel had was pretty awesome. It was like a whip cross. It had like a chain inside of it.
Yeah. Pretty awesome.
Bionic Commando, the arm. That was
his
pretty
arm.
Cool.
Yeah,
but you gotta lose your arm.
Which version of the arm? Because, you know, there's the one that talks back to you and has your wife in it.
Oh,
or there's
shit.
The one. Yeah. Or there's the normal one.
I want to give a shout out to Melon Matt, who says a weapon I'm surprised none of us said yet. The BFG from Doom.
The BFG.
BFG was crazy, man.
I mean, that was like. We could have a wish list of weapons. You could say the Hammer of Dawn from Gears of War. I mean, that was amazing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a laundry list.
Super
Sledge. Hey, Brian, here's one for you, man. Young Savage says Ortho's Prime from Warframe.
Mm. Okay. I totally forgot about Warframe. That has some cool weapons.
Uh-oh.
I don't know.
Those Warframes could be weapons, can't they?
They are pretty much walking weapons.
It's, without going into spoiler territory, yes, they are. But yeah, I guess anything from Warframe that doesn't suck.
Yeah.
I know. Tiger's Prime. That's it. The Tiger's Prime. That thing hits like 17 trucks.
Oh, Brian, I got another one for you, man. Algira says the Nymean Cestus from God of War. Didn't you like that one? The fucking lion paw and shit.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, but looks heavy, though.
No, but it's cool. You don't have to use it. It just looks cool, you know?
No, but he's also he's thinking practically. He's
I'm not thinking practically.
I can use this shit.
I'm not thinking practically. Give me a Metal Gear.
That's why I picked Ray. Yeah. I get in it, you know. It doesn't work.
Hey, if that's the case, I'm gonna pick one of the robots from Virtual On then. You know.
Yeah, there you go, man.
I would also say, you know, this is just a personal favorite, the Johnny gun from Metal Gear 4. That thing was cool. It's a real gun, like the gun. I can't remember the name of the gun, but it's a crazy sniper rifle that could shoot through walls and all kinds of other shit. And it's like with the you know. If you include the railgun, it's like like the second most powerful normal hand like gun in the game, you know, missile.
Shout out to the portal gun from Portal. I mean, I know that's kind of like the hipster answer, but
it's not really a weapon.
It is a weapon though.
It's so.
It's you could kill somebody like that if you use it correctly. You know,
whatever it is, I want it.
Yeah, you got the moon.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh man,
I've killed myself with a portal gun many a time.
See,
so that and also shout out to a rocket launcher I created in Fallout 3 that shot teddy bears and killed
it. Yeah, yes, cool man.
How?
Yeah, man, you can shoot teddy bears from a rocket launcher. You can customize it, and it'll actually kill people.
That's awesome.
Okay, I think I have it now. The magnet gun from Red Faction Armageddon.
There you go.
So pretty much, magnet gun. Shoot one end one side, one end the other side, and they will come together, no matter what's in between.
What was the name of that gun Gordon Freeman had in Half-Life 2?
Gravity gun.
That thing was awesome, too.
How about, all right, in Just Cause, his grappling hook? That thing is amazing. It's like endless fun.
I think like bends the laws of physics. It's like if you grapple to the floor, you technically live. It's like
yes.
It's that makes no sense. Grappling to moving cars and stuff.
Yeah, because Brian, think about that. Like when you grapple yourself to the ground, you're actually accelerating faster. You know,
you travel faster to the point where you don't hurt yourself. It's like no, that's not how things work.
He's like, no problems.
All right, no man. Yeah, let's move on here, man. My man, Wiz, he asked us. This is a little bit more of a technical question, but it is still related to gaming. What do you think YouTube can do to make things easier for gaming YouTubers and streamers, or will they lose gamers to Twitch forever?
Make things easier for. I mean, you know, the YouTube thing.
First thing is don't flag people for posting gameplay footage. That's the first thing.
Yeah, like, what's up with that shit? It's like, dude, we're literally putting out fucking commercials for your asses. So don't start doing that shit.
That's why I changed the format of Tony's Takes. Tony's Takes used to be me talking over gameplay footage. Now it's me on camera because when I posted it with video, I got flagged for no fucking reason. You know, so don't flag. Listen, if you want to have gaming on YouTube, don't flag gaming videos. That is so fucking retarded. You know,
I don't think they want gaming on YouTube,
but they have a whole section for it. They do want gaming on it. Yeah,
I think it's a secondary. If they did, they wouldn't attack like the way they are. I mean, you don't see Mixer doing it, and definitely not Twitch. So I think they're just trying to change things up and to get into like that Netflix model.
Why bother even creating a gaming section for YouTube in the first place?
It's just to put something there, just so you have it, you know? It's like going to any kind of department store and they're like, oh yeah, we have a sporting goods section. I'm like, you have baseball.
That's a good guy.
It's like a department store and you just have those different sections. Hey, it's the electronic.
Yeah.
By the way, you know, Adam, I think you might be right about that because I passed by a PC Richard the other day, right? You're like, we sell mattresses. I'm like, PC Richard? What? Like,
yeah, man.
You know, like you're supposed to sell appliances here. You know,
times have changed.
It's crazy.
Just trying to make that money. They don't care.
Yeah. Well, PC Richards, they're a bunch of scam artists. Those fuckers are.
Man. All right. But yeah, that's my take. It's like, don't flag gaming videos. That's stupid. You know?
I would just say, like, you know, like their streaming speed shit is slow as hell. Like, you know, especially when it, you know, comes to, you know, like you'll do something directly to Twitch and it's like right away. for like YouTube, it's like a year later.
That's why I have to have you guys wait like a million years before the show actually starts, because YouTube takes forever, you know? Like if we were streaming to Twitch and Mixer, we'd start right away. I hit stream and then 2 seconds later we could start. But with YouTube, we have to wait 15, 20 seconds, you know? It's insane. Yeah, definitely fix that upload speed or whatever, you know? Anybody else? Any other suggestions to make gaming better for YouTube?
They could also have like a tool that'll put like maybe like overlays or something, so like you don't have to use OBS to.
Oh yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, make it so like a customizable overlay to add into your streams. I think that would be cool.
Does Twitch have anything like that?
I don't know.
Yeah, because you can't really ask YouTube to do something that hasn't been done by somebody else. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
right. You can.
I mean, you can, but I feel it's not fair. You know.
Yeah, well, YouTube might have to do some stuff that other people aren't doing to get the gamers back to them.
Yeah, that is also true. I don't know, man. I think Adam may be right about it. They're just half-heartedly doing this shit, you know?
They're going in a different direction. If you go on their main page, they're talking about all these original series, part of the Red Service. They're trying to get into that model, you know, and I think that's why they're doing the whole cleanup. They're like, you know what? We'll go on that model. We'll get some legit advertisers. Forget about playing nice like we did before. Now we got a shitload of content. We don't care. You know, they don't have to worry about, oh, well, we're pissing off this YouTuber. It doesn't matter. You guys are dime a dozen.
Yeah, because if you think about it, the whole YouTube gaming thing came about before the whole YouTube Red nonsense, you know?
Yeah.
You might be right, man. All right. Moving on here to my man, Melon Matt, who is actually a first-time asker. So shout out to nice. You, dude. He's been in the chat room the whole night, which is awesome. So his question is, okay, he goes, "Welp, I'm going PC. So is it better to go 4K or 144 hertz? I have a 1080 Ti, by the way, on the way. So should he get a monitor?" He's asking gaming monitors. Should he get a monitor that focuses on 4K or 144 hertz? My question is, can you get one that does both? That's my question. But if there isn't, which one should he focus on? I personally say, if you could only get one, focus on the 144 hertz one. You want those high frames, bro. I was playing Gears of War 4. It was between 120 and 140 4 frames a second. Fucking gorgeous. 4K wouldn't have made the game any better. Let's just be honest, you know? So that's my personal answer. Get the 144 hertz one.
But it also depends on what resolution they want. Does he want that on 1080p? You can do a 1440p at 144 hertz.
Yeah, yeah, which is like the optimal shit, isn't it, Carlos?
Yeah, so that's like essentially it's 2K, and you can get that with a 144 hertz monitor. And yeah, I would go with that too.
Yeah, there you
go. I prefer, yeah, because you can max everything out and still do pretty good with the Ti, the 1080 Ti. You got a really good graphics card. You're barely getting into PC gaming, and you're going to like the most optimal shit out right now. That's not a Titan. That's crazy.
That's how you do it, man. Remember my first year, I got the 1080. You know, like, fuck that. Let's go, you know?
Yeah, go ahead, Brian. I would go with the 144 hertz as well, because I think that would just give you overall better fun in general. Again, 4K won't really do much, apart from just look shiny. But really where it's at is those high frame rates. And
Yeah.
And I don't think that it is possible to even get a 144 hertz 4K monitor.
Yeah,
I don't think that it's supported yet.
Yeah.
No, it's not. And also, when you're playing on a monitor, 2K versus 4K, it's not that much of a difference, to be honest. I have both, and I'm looking at them right now, and it's not that noticeable, to be honest. So I would go, 2K, 1440 hertz, or 144 hertz.
I also want to point out that 144 hertz is the refresh rate of the monitor.
Yes.
Which puts no extra burden on your PC, whereas rendering in 4K will put an extra burden on your PC and cause your games to run slower. So, and then you might actually drop below the native frame rate of the monitor. The problem becomes, like, if you want to have 120 frames per second, it's not going to do you a whole lot of good unless you have the monitor with a higher hertz rate. That's just how it is. So if you want to be able to appreciate those glorious frames that you're getting from that GPU, then I would say, yeah, I'd agree with the pack. Just go with the 144. Yeah. Because then you are going to be blasting into between 90 and 120 frames per second on some games, which you will need a monitor like that to be able to show adequately. Whereas if you went the 4K, it would just bog down your game experience until you're hitting, you know, 30 glorious frames per second of 4K, but it's not going to change your game experience as much as having fluid gameplay will.
Yep. Does anyone say 4K for this? Because I think every one of us agrees the 144 hertz is better.
I don't think gaming's caught up to 4K yet.
Oh, controversial statement.
not as a whole. There are certain games.
Yeah, no, Brett, I completely agree with you. The 4K thing is bullshit right now, you know? What's up?
Oh, go ahead.
It's going to be quick. Someone brought up a good point. If you're going to buy a 4K TV, why just stick with that?
Yeah.
And you get the 144 hertz, so you can have both.
That's right. That's a great point. Who said that shit? Trickstar. Thank you. That's a new name, too. What's up, brother? All right. And the last two questions at the last minute from our boy, Barry Burton, man. And both of them are about the N64. So the first question is, should Nintendo release the N64 Classic? The much more advanced controller and quote-unquote rumble feature will be expensive to replicate, and all of the games will need major graphics updates to look halfway decent in HD. So, yeah, should they release an N64 Classic? Why not?
No, please no.
Okay, why
please
not? Okay, I mean, I say why not. I don't care, but anyway, why do you say no, Brett? Because I know your answer, because those games look like fucking shit now, you know?
Because polygons versus pixels, man. Like, you're talking the end of an age of using pixels when people had gotten really good at it and managed to create some really beautiful things with very minimal things to the very beginning, you know, shaky leg baby goat kind of thing of polygon to try and render shapes, which a lot of times worked awfully, and those games have not aged well. It even says in the question they would require polishing in order to look halfway decent. You're assuming that they would polish them to look halfway decent.
They ain't doing
that.
They
haven't gone back and remastered any of the games for the classic system, so you wouldn't be getting a remastered version of Mario 64. You'd just be getting Mario 64. And while there are people who are going to be like, that's the best Mario game ever! Like, no, it aged like shit, as did everything on the Nintendo 64. I'm sorry.
Yo, Carlos, that sounds familiar.
Yo, Chris, you want to go at it right now, man?
No, we'll save that for another day, fellas. Brad, you're 100% right. Those games are not, Nintendo's not gonna fucking, like, they'll make them compatible with 1080p, but they're not gonna upscale them or anything like that. You know what I'm saying? They're not gonna do shit to them. And here's the thing, we said this before, games of that generation, I'm talking about PS1, N64, Saturn, do not hold up. The polygons look like fucking dog shit, you know? So you definitely don't want that. But, you know, at the same time, Nintendo could do it, but it's going to be more expensive. That shit's probably going to be $100, you know?
I would say no. I mean, obviously, financially, it would be reasonable to do it, but I would say for me, I would prefer no, just release these games on a virtual console on the Switch. That's what I wanted them to do with the SNES stuff and everything else, but their track record right now is that they're probably going to release one, because these things are making way too much money. Way too much money. These things are selling out freaking retro consoles, man. I can't fucking believe this shit. Only fucking Nintendo.
Yo, Carlos, speaking about that. Yeah, man. You know? But for the guys listening, this is my Super Nintendo Classic. This thing is fucking awesome, by the way. But yeah, you know what? I'm going to go with you guys then. Fuck that. Don't release it. It's going to look like shit.
Imagine having all of those in your Switch right now. That would be pretty sick.
I mean, yeah, this should be on the virtual console. This should be on the virtual console. Yeah, this should be on the virtual console, sure. Put them on the virtual console. Don't release an N64 Classic. That's stupid.
Because I have issues with the Switch controllers, but I would actually not mind playing a lot of those 2D games on the go on the Switch.
Yeah.
Because I'm fine with playing 2D games. 3D games, there's something.
Yeah. All right, you guys changed my mind. Don't do it. Don't do it, Nintendo. All right, man, let's move on. The last question, this one's a tough one for, actually, I'm going to bow out of this question because I can't answer it. Can each of you name three must-have Nintendo 64 games without repeating the other's picks? Oh, shit. Ooh, okay. He added a twist to it.
What a twist.
Can I go first? Because I'm the youngest and I want to make things exciting for you guys.
Go for it.
Okay. Super Mario 64. GoldenEye.
Screw you, bro.
Fuck you.
Shit. Damn it.
Brian, you need help, man?
I don't know what...
Say Ocarina of Time.
Just God
say
damn it!
Yeah.
Yes.
Fuck you. I know you did that on purpose.
Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. I don't know which Zelda that was.
Okay. I know you did it on purpose.
No mercy, WrestleMania.
All right. Adam, you started already, so name three. No must mercy.
WrestleMania. Well, WCW. That was the best one. And Mario Kart.
So three games?
Which one was the first one?
No Mercy.
No Mercy. No Mercy, okay.
WWE, and then the WCW that they had, the WCW versus the World, I think, or something like that.
And then Mario Kart.
Oh, yeah. Over WCW versus NWO?
Yeah, that was it. Those two.
Oh, okay.
Yep. All right, Carlos, since you're talking.
You sure you want me to go before Brett?
Yes, I'm screwing you over now, Brett.
I know.
No, don't worry, Brett.
Go ahead. I'm up for the challenge.
No,
I'm if you pull out my ace in the hole, I'm gonna curse you.
I'm pretty sure you're not gonna mention any of these except for one of them. All right, so the one that is kind of obvious and everyone should buy is Star Fox 64. Man, that game still holds up. I don't care what anyone says.
Yep.
Nostalgia eyes. I'm fucking with you, Carlos. I don't know. I never played this shit. I don't know. Go ahead.
Yo, man. Yo, Star Fox 64, man. I played that recently too. It's still good. I mean, obviously, hopefully people won't think it's nostalgia, but I think it's still good. So anyways, the next game, and I think this is the best platformer on the N64.
Uh-oh.
And I freaking love Super Mario 64, but I think this one is a better platformer. And that's Banjo-Kazooie, man. Banjo-Kazooie is like, it's way more intricate. It has way more things to do. It has way more platforming elements than Super Mario 64. I think it came out a year after Super Mario 64. So it had a chance to kind of kind of add on to the new 3D platforming genre. So I would say that. And then a game that no one will mention, but I freaking love this game. It's fucking Yoshi's Story, man.
Interesting.
I love that game. A lot of people don't like it. Actually, a lot of people hated it.
I never even heard of that fucking game.
Yo, man, Yoshi's Story is a shit. It's like you just play as Yoshi, man. What else do you want from a game, man? When you can play Yoshi the whole time, there's a lot of Yoshis, and they're all like a lot of different colored Yoshis too, man.
Did you like Yoshi's Island?
Super Mario World 2?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. Hell yeah. One of the best ones.
Do yourself a favor. Go to the Mushroom Kingdom in Mario 60 in Super Mario Odyssey. Yoshi's there.
Oh yeah. Oh, trust me, man. I've been through that. It sucks, man. I wish I could take him on the other kingdoms too.
Yeah, right.
Been there, done that.
All right, Brett. Go ahead, Ben.
Smash Brothers, Bomberman 64, and Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Oh, wow.
Yo, man, the 64 was a great console, man.
It was. Like, that wasn't even that hard.
All right, Chris. Remember, you can't repeat any either.
All right. I'd say Star Wars Shadows of the Empire.
That was a big one back then.
Rogue Squadron, also an awesome game. And Perfect Dark.
Yo, the N64 was good to Star Wars, man. Star Wars was
Rogue Squadron was a great game.
Manny, you want to try your hand at this?
Sure. I mean, Star Wars Episode One Racer. I really enjoyed that.
The pod racing game?
Yeah, the pod racer game.
Yeah, that was good.
Somebody already mentioned GoldenEye, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Brian. Yep. Okay.
Brian GoldenEye. Come back to me. Am I the last one?
Yeah. I mean, you know what? Let's combine our answers because nobody talked about Donkey Kong. Isn't that supposed to be the hot shit in that system too?
Yeah, Donkey Kong 64
wasn't that great?
Yeah,
it wasn't as good as the.
Was F-Zero on N64?
Yeah,
Manny, have a freebie, Majora's Mask.
Oh, yeah, nobody mentioned.
Nobody mentioned Zelda Majora's Mask.
Yeah, there you go. Counts. Hey, nobody. I just got that on 3DS, man.
No one mentioned Paper Mario.
All right, so there we go.
Okay. Here's what I got. What was my first one again? That was
I don't know what your first one was.
Okay, we're gonna go back. I'm gonna say.
No, man, nobody picked Turok.
Episode one.
You said pod racing.
I said episode one Pod Racer, Blast Corps, and
yes.
Say Turok, the dinosaur hunter.
Turok. These dudes in the comments are saying Turok like crazy, man.
Dude, I was gonna say Turok. Yeah. Age well.
Yeah, that's a game that I would say didn't really age well as well.
Nobody also, like Kirby 64.
I did like
Crystal Shards is good.
I know it's not exclusive, but the first Tony Hawk came out on 64.
Yeah, but it's good exclusive. That was on PlayStation. Yeah.
By the way.
There was a better game than Mario Kart.
Diddy Kong Racing?
Diddy Kong Racing.
Yes, man.
Yo, also, by the way, F-Zero X.
Yo, now you guys are going to want that N64 classic, man. You're jerking off right now, son.
shout out to Banjo-Tooie, man. Because Banjo-Kazooie was made with Banjo-Tooie in mind. So things you did, like, there was, like, levels that in Banjo-Kazooie that you couldn't freaking reach. It's like, or you couldn't access. It's like, why the hell is this here? But you freaking played Banjo-Tooie and like, oh shit, I can access this?
Yeah. Yo, great, Chris, man. What about Killer Instinct, man?
Oh, Killer Instinct.
Yeah, K.I.? Well, wait a minute. K.I. was K.I. Gold on?
Yeah, one of them was on 64.
And I need to consult my wife. She's the...
She's the Killer Instinct expert.
Shout out to Pokemon Snap.
Oh, and you got Pokemon Stadium?
And Stadium, yeah. Plug in your Game Boy game on it.
Yeah, that was interconnectivity. It's funny they could do it 20-something years ago, and they still can't do it today. You know?
Damn it, Tony, you're wrong. Tony Hawk did also come out on N64.
No, I didn't say it didn't.
Yeah, I thought you said it only came out on PlayStation.
No, I said it also came out on PlayStation. That's why I'm not counting that.
Yeah. Oh, no, we're only talking exclusives.
Yeah.
By the way, Melon, someone already mentioned Smash Bros. I think it was Brett.
Yeah, and who is it? Change your fucking name, bro. You're not Willie Robinson. Confusing the fuck out of me. He also says, me yelling at the fans, he goes, Diddy Kong greater than Mario Kart. Hey, the guys agree.
Yeah.
Willie Robinson. That's not your name, motherfucker. All right.
Shout out to Wiz.
Yeah. Barry Burns says, unfortunately, most of those Rare games are going to have licensing problems.
Yeah, they were on Rare Replays. Microsoft has them now.
You know? I think that's it, man, for the show. So just one notable thing here, and this has been a long time since this has happened. I'm not going to be hosting Throw On Your Questions for the next one, you know?
Oh, no.
I'm going to be over at the PlayStation. I'm actually going to be working at PlayStation Experience this year, so Manny's going to host the shit, you know?
Yep. So I'm going to be here. We're going to be doing some questions. You're going to hear me read them very badly.
Nah, just have one of the other guys read it, man. You know you suck at that shit. Just have Carlos or Chris read them, you know? It'll be the way you handle questions before. Didn't one of the guys read them for you before?
Yeah, I had somebody else read it for me. I'm sorry. My dyslexia. I can't even say dyslexia is pretty bad, and I'm not very good at, like, reading things out loud.
Yeah. However, I will say if I have time, I will jump in, but it makes more sense to Manny to host it because he has the OBS streaming, you know? Yeah,
I have all the OBS stuff and I have all of our stuff so we can just run a Hangouts like normal and like that.
Yeah, it'll be cool. And also, because we were asked about this, no, we will not be doing Throw It on Wednesday because of the Game Awards. We're going to be doing it on Thursday as normal, but we may interject and throw in some Game Awards shit near the end of the show. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because I think when we go live, they may be doing their Game of the Year stuff. So we're going to go in there and just, you know, tell them how wrong they were.
Yeah, we'll discuss when PUBG wins.
You know it's going to be PUBG. You already know it's going to be PUBG. You know? Fucking ridiculous, man. All right, so that is it. So thank you for watching and listening. Leave us a question in the comment section of this episode here on YouTube or over on The Coalition. We'll answer them on next week's show. Subscribe to Throwdown on SoundCloud, iTunes, and YouTube. Follow us on Twitch, Mixer, Twitter, and Facebook at Throwdown Show. Links are located in the description below. Once again, our show is Tony Polanco. Tonight, joined by Emilio Lopez.
I'll see you later, guys. I just wanted to also point you toward my Twitter, which I recently did a post of a account from my friend who had a Switch that went bad and what happened to his save data. One thing they don't tell you when you buy a Switch is that you don't save your save data on the actual SD card. It's actually on your console. So if your console goes bad, all of your save data. And there's no online saves or any other thing. So, hidden issue with the Switch.
Yeah, well, we may talk about that on Thursday because that's some fucked up shit, man.
Chris, yeah, that was common knowledge.
Yeah, but yeah, you know, he didn't know that. My man didn't know that. So I'm assuming a lot of others don't know that shit either. Even you I was would, like, really? Because I thought it was saving to my SD card.
You
no,
you would think if you stick an SD card inside of there, you could, you know, put that stuff on there. No,
it just makes too much sense, man. All right, Chris Seeley's.
Hey, take care, everyone.
Brian Manjoma.
Have a good one, people.
Carlos Romero.
Apparently, the mid-season finale of The Walking Dead aired today, and I haven't watched it. No,
it's next week. It's next week.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, well, anyways, I still haven't even watched a single episode this season. Don't worry.
You didn't miss anything.
Yeah. Go watch The Punisher instead.
Yeah, Punisher was good.
Brett Murdoch.
I will begrudgingly admit The Punisher was good.
Oh, was good. Why begrudgingly? And Adam Vale.
Punisher's not a superhero. Always remember that.
Yeah, he never. Who says he's a superhero? That's stupid.
A lot of people say, "Oh, he's the superhero of the Marvel universe." And
like, no, yeah, that's stupid. He's not a superhero. He's just a guy with guns, man. That's all he is. All right, man.
His superpower is guns.
Yeah, he is.
The COD man.
Batman's not a superhero either. All right, man. We'll see y'all, man. Next time, later.
Later, guys.
Peace.